Great. I'm the king of excess. I'm the sultan of sales. I'm the boss of bargains. My credit cards, they never fail. I got a 700 something on my beacon score, which means I don't own a thing and I can buy even more. I'm a buffet eating, tablet reading, lovable guy. I get the best of the best that my money can't buy. It's a wonderful life. Chief of cha-ching, yeah. Oh, I'm better than Julian Drews. I get more than a few of my favorite things. I spent $700, but I saved 10% on the samurai sword, but I forgot to pay rent. I'm a bottom-dealing, system-beating, trustworthy guy, and I'll break even when my pet pig learns to fly. It's a wonderful life. It's my down payment. Who wants a llama ride? Anybody? Too soon? Do you need more money?
Yeah!
Do you need more gas?
Oh, yeah!
Do you need a bigger house and a big old car,
yeah,
and a big old burger on a tiki bar,
yeah,
and a big old rocket to reach big old Mars?
Yeah.
Do you? Pride to keep the Joneses at bay. I buy 405. I'm a stick loving, beer gutting, huggable guy, and I used to be friends with the Magnum PI. It's a wonderful life. It's a wonderful life. Look at my gold plated thighs. It's a wonderful life. It's a wonderful.
White Aaron Resistance, White Aaron Resistance calling. This is the webmaster on August 29th, 2016. The following story is one about India, canary in the coal mine of the entire world in the next 15 years. What you don't hear in the story about India and the lack of water is that big corporations have come from the U.S. to India through the government letting them in and allowing these companies, specifically Monsanto's, to use the water supply to grow single-source crops, not diverse crops that sustain a country, but single-source crops that are meant only for export to other countries to make the corporate profits.
A water tanker delivers drinking water to this village once a week. But it's rationed, only 8 liters per person for 7 days. That's meant to cover household needs as well. There are no other sources of water anywhere nearby.
Water.
The water has disappeared actually suddenly, and it is not the one village or the two villages, it is entire community.
This is one of thousands of Indian villages where water is the most precious commodity. According to scientists, in just 15 years our planet will suffer a global crisis, the most devastating one humankind has ever faced. Everyone will be affected. People living in India's hot and arid regions figured out a way of collecting monsoon waters in specially created pools. They use them until the next rainy season. But the monsoon has been late for the past 2 years, and all the water was used up a long time ago. There used to be a pond here, but the local farmers have built mounds around their fields to keep the water for themselves, rather than let it run into the common reservoir. And so the reservoir, which is used to serve the village all year round, is now only half full. By the time the hottest spring months arrive, it's already dried out. Jivi doesn't have anyone to look after her baby at home, so she takes him to work with her. With other women, she's working on deepening the pond to collect water once it finally rains. They earn 120 rupees a day. They need this money to buy water. The villagers have been waiting for over a month for the big rains to come and for free water to start falling from the skies. But all in vain. Sakharam Bhagat's first wife was spending far too much time getting water, and she didn't have any energy left to take care of the kids. So he decided to take a second wife. He reasoned that his first wife would be able to mind the children and keep house, while the second would be free to fetch water. But his second wife turned out to be a sickly woman, unfit for water duty, so his plan failed. This is how the third wife appeared on the scene. When the rains finally arrived in 2015, they were too scarce to provide the state with water. In 2016, the monsoon season was late again. But of course, this isn't the only problem. The Green Revolution is what they call the agricultural boom enjoyed by India several decades ago. New land was cultivated, new technologies were introduced, river flows were reversed, yielding outstanding crops. But apparently, now it's time to pay back for all this explosive growth. Among other things, with shrinking water supplies. Water shortages have become a national catastrophe.
It's a rural suicide, which affects the entire rural India. And that is 67% of the Indian population. In this part of Punjab, the primary reason is water. Isn't it paradoxical? We have the rivers, we have all the water, but we can't use it ourselves.
For many years, Inderjit Singh Jaiji has been trying to raise awareness of the suicide epidemic. He talks to the families of the deceased, trying to get to the heart of the matter. The Punjab used to be at the forefront of the nation's agriculture. An irrigation system was built to bring water to the neighboring arid states. As a result, Punjab's water table started to drop, making farming increasingly difficult. Local farmers would go bankrupt, borrow money, and then, as they were unable to pay their debts, they committed suicide.
Primary responsibility for the suicide is the loss of the river water to a non-riparian state, Haryana, Delhi, and mainly Rajasthan.
Relatives of the dead come to this small dam that separates the canal into three branches. They are hoping to find the bodies of their loved ones in the water, at least those who committed suicide by jumping into the canal. Ashu Malik is a diver, but he only recovers the bodies of those whose relatives are ready to pay him. It's a business. Ashu doesn't work for the government. If a body isn't identified and there's no one to claim it, he drops it back into the water.
Every day, 3-4 bodies come. They lie scattered, dogs eat them. They remain in the water. The water is contaminated. The fields are contaminated. The police doesn't take them to the mortuary. The police doesn't remove them from there. The police officer over there was saying, zero suicide, no bodies. Didn't the police, the officers over say, no bodies over there? And yet you saw the bodies. So isn't the government hiding the suicides? Today, in one day, for 5 those, 2 here, 7 bodies are gone in one day. And the police says, not even one body a day.
Singh has been trying to solve this problem all his life. He has been arrested a number of times. He even had to serve time in jail. However, he hasn't given up and continues to do everything in his power. One theory is that this land was once a savanna or even a forest. But for many centuries, people exploited the land so badly that the former abundance turned into a barren desert. However, the people didn't quit this waterless, scorched land, but instead adapted to living here. They figured out how to collect rainwater and make the supply last throughout the year. And they lived like this for a long time. But over the last decade, everything has changed. Paradoxically, the irrigation channels dug under politicians' orders eventually dried up. The water towers built by the government aren't functioning, and only the reservoirs constructed using ancient technologies are still surprisingly in use.
This pond belongs to the community. Everyone rises to take water from here. If monsoon late, then people not suffer because they have water. They use for domestic purpose, not for selling. So people say, this is our water bank. This water is very pure for drinking. We try to check in laboratory. No contamination, no biological, no chemical, any type. You see, this water is very, very clean. You see, you can drink, no problem. This is a worldwide problem. I was last days, in Africa, Kenya and Malawi. They have a lot of rains twice a year, long spell and short spell, but they also facing crisis. So why not think we about the water? So this is the natural things we are going waste water in without using.
Throughout much of its history, humankind got by using water that fell from the sky. But modern industry requires water for irrigation, cooling, and manufacturing. The demand for fresh water has already exceeded supply. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development has estimated that in 15 years, 47% of the world's population will suffer from water shortages. India is one of the first countries to face this water crisis.
Here's a clip from a video game manufacturer and its application in real-world warfare.
Our earning a living is very competitive, and I think it's great. And it's not something we ever imagined when we first started making this game.
Even the advertising trailer for Call of Duty shows possible reasons for the game's popularity. It combines violence, heroic poses, and futuristic war technology.
You know, you see a lot of future type stuff where you get a lot of these energy weapons like laser guns and all this kind of thing, and we wanted to stay away from that because we feel that's sort of too science fiction for us. But it opened our eyes as to, you know, that restriction aside, how much is actually being worked on right now? There's just some crazy stuff going on. Drones in particular, it's fascinating to see where this will go, because drones now have these things called mission packages, where you can actually autonomously program a drone to go on a mission completely on its own, no human interaction needed. And this technology exists today. You know, the day when you will have a drone that can have a mission package to go somewhere, target somebody, take them out and then return is an incredibly scary world.
The Paris Air Show is the biggest aerospace trade fair in the world and a marketplace for military machines. Where's this development heading? We are hoping to get some answers.
Please welcome to the podium the Secretary of the United States Air Force, Deborah Lee James. Ma'am.
Well, good morning, Team USA. You are looking sharp. Good morning, everybody. As I said yesterday, we in the Air Force like to talk about global vigilance, global reach, global power. But you can't get any of that done without global industry backing us up and also without our global partnerships. So we're very, very grateful for all of that. Because you see, collectively, you and I, all of us together, we are all air power. And today, air power is air and it's space and cyber. Thank you very much.
After months of trying, an American film crew is allowed to enter the plant at General Atomics. As a German crew, we constitute a security risk.
The payload beneath its wings, another 750 pounds of payload in the centerline hardpoint. And let me say without reservation, the future of remotely piloted aircraft is bright. And this company is representative of that. In the last 25 years, we have logged over 3 million flight hours with our remotely piloted aircraft. And it's interesting to note that that curve is exponential. The more we produce, the more it's flown. In fact, in 2014, we flew over 500,000 flight hours in 1 year alone. And I think it's interesting to note that every second of every day, there are 57 of our aircraft airborne worldwide. In fact, we're building an aircraft for Germany called the certifiable Schutzengel. We use the term Schutzengel for the product to Germany because it really is a guardian angel in that it does provide humanitarian relief, saves lives in combat, and civilians on the ground.
Making soldiers into heroes has long been a tradition, not just in America. His willingness to sacrifice himself is what makes a soldier deployable. What value do so-called soldierly virtues have in a future where unmanned machines dominate the battlefield?
Well, they're technicians. We already have these kinds of people. They're in the Air Force, and they scare me. They frighten me. These are people who have no ethics. They have no morals. They are amoral. They are apolitical. They have no real concerns about anything but the technology in front of them. Silicon Valley in California has produced thousands of these people. I meet them. I talk with them. I see them. And I understand them, I think. And it scares me. They have no ethical compass at all. Their question is, how do I perfect the technology? How do I make the technology do what my customer wants it to do or what I want it to do? And how do I refine that technology as I go along? There is no ethical component to their thought. We are producing these people today in our universities, in our corporations, in our society, and they are frightening people.
If people no longer have ethics, could ethics perhaps be built into the machines? We fly to Atlanta, to the Georgia Institute of Technology. I have read that Professor Ronald Arkin is doing research on an ethics software for robots.
The most depressing work that I had to do was studying human behavior in battlefield environments. The battlefield environment brings often in many human beings, in some cases, the best. I mean, you can see noble examples. These, unfortunately, are highlights or exceptions in many cases. But often we see atrocious behavior, literally atrocious behavior, where non-combatants are slaughtered unjustifiably in the battlefield. Reading and studying human behavior in the battlefield as part of the work that I did is what caused me to think that we can create robotic systems that can outperform human beings in this case. They can act in a more rational, I would contend, it might sound strange, but a more rational manner under these sets of circumstances without having fear of self-destruction or anger or frustration embedded within them to be able to come up potentially with better decisions for this. The real question is, how can we take what human beings have already decided is ethical behavior and make sure that the robot complies with that? So what we do is extract from those laws the principles that say you're allowed to do this and you're not allowed to do that. We do that with our warfighters as well, too. We tell our soldiers, you're allowed to do this and you're not allowed to do that. They don't reason from first principles in terms of deriving international humanitarian law where in the battlefield they've been told what is right and what is wrong. And in essence, we're doing the same thing with the robot. We're telling it what's right and wrong through code in this particular case.
Using a software called Ethical Governor, the robots of the future should control themselves and develop a guilt sensor.
In the scenario depicted here, an unmanned rotorcraft is dispatched on a search and destroy mission. While performing its mission, the unmanned rotorcraft encounters an enemy convoy within the designated kill zone. The robot searches through its choice of available weapons and weapon release positions for a combination that can simultaneously satisfy the obligation and the laws of war while striving to minimize civilian collateral damage. After battle damage assessment has occurred, the robot compares the actual damage to the estimate computed prior to the engagement. If the resulting battle damage exceeds that expected by the robot, the ethical adapter computes a guilt value corresponding to the actual excessive damage incurred. This guilt value, derived from a cognitively plausible model, is computed as a function of a range of variables, including the military necessity associated with the target and mission, the number of casualties, including combatant, non-combatant, and friendly, and the amount of civilian structural damage sustained. As a consequence, when guilt levels increase, various weapon systems are deactivated by the ethical adapter in relation to their destructive potential.
As always, there are different perspectives. That of the map, that of the camera from above, and that of the phone camera from below.
The last part of the show is an interview with Tom and a black radio show host named G-Man. We'll end it on this.
Thank you very much for calling me and granting me this interview. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Recent news reports have indicated the following. Metzger is accused in the court papers of providing bomb-making instructions to longtime war White Aryan Resistance Associates Dennis and Daniel Mahan, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, in a plot to send a mail bomb to the black man who was then the diversity officer for the city of Scottsdale, Arizona. Don Logan's hands were maimed and two colleagues were less seriously injured when he opened a package containing a pipe bomb on February 26, 2004 at his city office. If you're able to discuss the case, what can you tell us about the federal government's attempt to bring new charges against you?
I don't think there is an attempt to bring new charges against me because that is totally false information that was put together by my old friends at the Southern Poverty Law Center, and specifically, I forget the guy's name that has a very much an imaginative reporting process.
Are you talking about Mr. Mark Potok?
No, it's one of his boys that went around and infiltrated several groups, and then he went to work for them. I guess he works as part-time or something, but I was going to dig out his name here, but I didn't get it done before you called. Anyhow, I welcome anybody to go through the files and show that to me, because we have access to the files, and it's not there. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that I supplied anybody with any bomb-making material or encouraged them to make a bomb or anything else.
So you're denying that there's any evidence out there against you or that the federal government has no legal grounds to come after you at this point?
Yes, that's my position. Now, I'm not sure somebody might get some creative things going. I don't put it past the ATF and the federal government to try to manufacture evidence, but there is no real evidence, and that's it. Dennis Mahan was a friend of mine, and so was his brother, but they were not my agents. They liked what I did, and I sent them newspapers once in a while and things like that, but I don't have agents that I direct to go around and do anything.
I'm sure you heard about the Sikh temple shooting in Wisconsin, Wade Michael Page.
Right.
What was your initial reaction when you heard about the shootings, given the fact that Page had a white supremacist background?
I wasn't shocked at all. I'm not shocked at any of these multiple victim shootings because it's just going to be actually on a week-to-week and sometimes day-to-day thing from all different areas of society as people become more upset, more pissed off, more unemployed, more this, more that, more fed with drugs and over-the-counter drugs and bad diet and everything else. I predict something like this will happen at least once a month, but probably more like once a week. It doesn't make any difference who it is or what they belong to. Okay. I'd never heard of anybody being that upset with the Sikhs. However, I'm not wired into the right wing anymore like I used to. I paddle my own boat and have my own positions, which most of them are rejected by the right wing. So, I mean, most of these guys that have done it on the right, I've never heard of. I think a lot of this is because guys are taught to kill in the military. He was in PSYOPs and stuff like that, and just like Tim McVeigh, I think they come back two-thirds ready to blow their stack before they even get off the boat.
I'm glad you said that, because I'd like to point something out.
Yes.
For many years, you and others affiliated with white nationalist movements have spoken out against so-called foreigners invading America.
Right.
You've also noted that it would be in the best interest of the movement if members carried out their objectives as individuals.
Right.
Your website, The Insurgent, is boldly described as leaderless resistance using independent lone wolf ideology. Now, the FBI, law enforcement officials, and the mainstream media noted that Page was a lone wolf. Having said that, can you understand why some would say Tom Metzger is partly responsible for creating the situation that took place in Wisconsin or fueling Wade Michael Page's hatred?
No, lone wolf is not copyrighted. It's just a term that's used all over, and you can see it all over the internet. Even gun shops have it. A lone wolf simply means instead of belonging to an organization, you're an independent activist. And what you do as an independent activist is strictly, obviously, up to the individual who's in control of whatever he does. They immediately take it the negative side that you're saying that people should go out and kill people and things like that. But our lone wolves mostly are infiltrated into the professions and anywhere we can infiltrate them into, rather than being prepared to go out and shoot up the town. Shooting up a Sikh temple is not going to get the non-whites out of this country, and it's not going to stop most of them from coming in. It's going to take something a lot different than that. I'm suspicious of that deal because I heard that he had a girlfriend lived right around the corner from the Sikh temple, and I just wonder whether something might have happened there. In a neighborhood situation where it drew his attention to them, or maybe some of them might have made a pass at his girlfriend or something that triggered him, because I don't keep records of where Sikhs are.
Do you have any remorse for the Sikh community or the people that were murdered?
My remorse is for white people. They're being brutalized every day in this country, and the troops, white troops that are being murdered and working for the corporations in Afghanistan and so forth. I've run out of sympathy for the non-whites because I've only got so much to go around.
You have no sympathy whatsoever for the Sikhs that were murdered in Wisconsin?
No, I have no personal sympathy because I didn't know any of them or anything else.
But they were human beings. With all due respect.
Well, they would be alive human beings if they'd have stayed in the area where they come from in Asia. And I'm the one that's trying to save these people's lives and so forth and keep them out of violence and all that by saying, look, we can't have this tremendously race-mixed country. It's going to fall to pieces. Now, if you should stay in your own country and work for your best interests of your own country, because the more and more you come here and forcefully mix, and the government does forcefully mix, the more violence there's going to be. So I feel no guilt or anything about that.
Do you believe Page should be viewed as a martyr by members of the white nationalist or white supremacist movement?
Oh, no, that's a good question. I think any man that does something that in his own individual heart feels that he's got to do for his race, I'm not going to throw him under the bus. I'm not going to put him on the front page of a newspaper, but I'm not going to throw him under the bus either, because the black race, there's all hundreds and hundreds of black criminals in prison who are put up as heroes, and I read their newspapers and so forth, where even guys with just multiple murders and rapes are held up as heroes. So I'm not going to throw any white man under the bus.
You wouldn't throw any white man under the bus.
Right.
Or acting on what he believes in, and that includes murdering innocents?
Well, in my world, there is no such thing as an innocent. I mean, you're either promoting one ideology or another. You're trying to cause something to happen in society, plus or minus, and so I don't see innocent people. I see people that get walk in front of a bus and they get run over, you know. I'm just saying non-whites, get out while you can, because it's going to blow in this country, and when it blows big time, it's going to really get bad. It's not going to be Mickey Mouse stuff shooting up a few Sikhs in a temple. It's going to be major, major uproar, and the Northern Command is all set to move in to try to stop it.
Okay, we'll come back to this point later, because I actually have a question regarding what you just said a little later on.
It's going to be initiated by economics. Economics will kick it off. Then racial tribalism will take control.
Okay. I want to stay on Wade Michael Page for a second.
Sure.
And the fact that he was a neo-Nazi and involved with skinheads and so forth.
Well, what's a neo-Nazi? Would you explain that to me? That's a media-created term that really doesn't exist in real life. Was he a racist? I guess he was. Did he play in a racist band? I guess he was. But neo-Nazi has become a catch-all that really is not that descriptive of an individual. It's not fair.
Well, in terms of Page, what I want to do is focus on the fact that he was a member of the military and he
yes.
was discharged.
Right.
And so I want to look at that. I want to go a little deeper into that.
Okay.
By asking, do you have any family members, friends, or acquaintances from the movement that have served or are currently serving in the U.S. military?
Plenty of them. Plenty of them, sure. I learned how to, the U.S. government taught me how to kill. Everything I know about killing, I learned from the U.S. government. So if I went out and killed, it would be the initial training came from the U.S. government and the taxpayers.
What branch did you serve in?
I was in the Army Signal Corps. I never saw action. I was in the military between the years of 56 and 59, and I served in mostly in Europe in radio stations.
During recent conversation with a member of the U.S. military, I was told that if Army officials discovered a white nationalist or supremacist was in its ranks, not much would happen to him or her because, as far as the Army is concerned, what the soldier does on their own time is their own business.
Well, that goes back to the Melvin Laird Act, which is doesn't really mean much anymore, to where you could belong to whatever you want to belong. That's not true. I've known a lot of guys who got kicked out because they had racist tattoos or they weren't even involved, weren't even allowed in. I think 10, 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, that was the case, but I've heard of lots of guys being kicked out or not even being left in because they had racial tattoos.
Well, even now, I mean, given the government's recent admission that white supremacists have infiltrated the U.S. military and that it was, in fact, a problem for them, and a number of them have displayed tattoos or played white nationalist music, and that's how a lot of them became, you know, a lot of the military found out about them.
Well, every black gang in this country is affiliated to the military. They don't seem to be worried about that. I mean, you got the Crips and the Bloods and everybody else, and they've been told to join the military and so forth, and they operate within the military. I don't have a day-to-day, month-to-month, any idea how many white guys may have been racial and have joined the military. There's no way of me knowing. But all I can say is that I told them a long time ago that if you're going to go in the military, get some good training, come back, because you may need it against the government someday when the government comes around to try to kick your door in. But I've also said that the guys that are going around getting tattoos and going around to all these festivals and so forth and getting their names on lists and everything else, they're going to be neutralized. There's nothing they really can do very much. But the people I advocate is the ones who go into the military with no tattoos, no connections whatsoever to any group, and nothing like that, and don't talk race. Even if you have to, pretend you're something else. You're a liberal. And so then you can infiltrate better if you desire to do that. But, of course, I'm not a dictator. If they choose to do that, they do that. If not, they don't. They won't detect if the people who listen to me that want to go in the military, and if they go by what I advise, they'll never detect them.
For those who may not be aware of the term, could you explain RAHOA and why it should be taken more seriously by people in this country?
Well, let's see. RAHOA means racial holy war. That was coined by Ben Klassen, who wrote the book Nature's Eternal Religion, and he wrote the White Man's Bible. Well, it means the white race is a race that's down to about 7% of the world's population and falling, and they're going to have to fight and do whatever they have to do to survive and expand their race. And so that's what we call a racial holy war.
And so you're using the first two letters from the three words, is that correct, when informing RAHOA?
Yes.
I see. I understand.
I didn't create the term.
No. I understand.
I didn't belong to the Church of the Creator. I was a friend of Ben Klassen, the creator of the Church of the Creator. And I do know various creators around the country that sometimes we have contact. But operating the way I do, I don't have daily contact with group members. I shy away from groups, period. Most of my contact comes through just maybe anonymous emails and things, letters and things like that.
And what would you cite as irrefutable proof that a racial holy war is on the verge of erupting in America?
Well,
you touched on it.
I have no idea when whether it's on the verge. I know that the racial violence is on the rise throughout the country from many factions. However, it'll first develop into an economic war, and the government will try to put it down. As the economy worsens and the government becomes more dictatorial, both the right and left are arming themselves. Blacks, whites, mestizos, everybody's arming themselves, and so at one point, it'll be an economic upheaval if there's an upheaval at all. I can't say for sure it'll happen. But when it starts, once the economic uproar starts, then people start to choose sides. You know, there's going to be all white groups. There's going to be all black groups. There's going to be mixed race groups. There's going to be the mestizo Mexicans, and there's going to be even some Asians and like that. And once it starts, it's not going to stop until there's a lot of, it's going to be bad.
And what would you say to those who believe that the implementation of the Patriot Act, the unprecedented level of power granted to federal, state, and local law enforcement, and technological advances in surveillance would prevent any of this from taking place?
In fact, it's the biggest thing that's going to cause it. The high-tech oppression that's coming on the American public is radicalizing millions of people. And they may not be able to respond high-tech, but I'm sure they can raise a lot of hell low-tech. So these are unconstitutional things, if you believe in the Constitution, that have happened to where the government has assumed power that it's not supposed to have. Homeland Security is just another reason for a police state. The amount of terrorism that's occurred in this country by any Middle Easterner is so small it's ridiculous. And they could have done a lot. I mean, I'm shocked that if the Al-Qaeda is so tough and rough, why there aren't things blowing up all over this country. I think it was simply a move towards power by the war criminal George Bush and now being carried on by Obama.
Does that mean that you support the theories regarding 9/11?
I don't believe the official story, no. I don't know. All you have to do is look at Building 7, and it tells you the whole story as far as that it was a controlled demolition. So once you know that Building 7 was a controlled demolition, you know there's some kind of conspiracy at foot. So naming exactly who or when or how, no, I'm not sure.
I'd like to touch on the Trayvon Martin situation. As you may have heard through news reports, George Zimmerman was told not to pursue Trayvon Martin by a police dispatcher. Zimmerman ignored a direct order which led to the fatal shooting of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin. How do you feel about Zimmerman dismissing the request of the dispatcher?
Well, number one, I want to make it clear, he is shown and talked about being a white man. He's not a white man at all. But beyond that, I have been involved in neighborhood watches years ago, and we never carried guns. The rule was you didn't carry guns. You carried mace, things like that, maybe a baseball bat, but you didn't carry a gun. So I'm shocked that the man had a gun on him. But I don't take a strong position on this because it's not my dogfight. I'm not going to side in with the people that are going crazy to hang the guy. But on the other hand, I would criticize the way he operated, and that he could have handled the situation with pepper spray. I've handled situations like that over and over again, simply with pepper spray.
Do you have any sympathy for Trayvon Martin's family at this point, the fact that their son was killed?
Well, I don't have any animosity towards them, but you see, this idea that I'm supposed to have these deep feelings over somebody that's 1,000 miles away and I have no idea, never met him in my life, I can't be a hypocrite. I think it was a bad situation and shouldn't have happened, but I think that... probably the fear factor entered into it, that there probably are a certain number of black criminals in that area, and they probably have a fairly high crime rate. I don't know for sure. And so, and then also you've got a guy here who wants to be Mr. Big Guy and carrying a gun around and things like that, and he overreacts, so... It was just bad chemistry.
Although they may be small in number, white rights groups like the Ku Klux Klan are embedded within the Tea Party. Over the last 2 years, Tea Party candidates have won major elections and forced Republicans to take a hard-line position on various issues. As a result, some conservatives now have grave concerns that the Republican Party is being pushed to the extreme right. What's your assessment?
I think the party's being... swept into a position of extreme stupidity. I'm not a right winger anymore. In fact, most of my positions are left wing, and I see a pox upon the Republicans, the Tea Party, and all those people. Democrats too. I wouldn't walk across the street to vote for any of them or work for any of them in a campaign. They're all and as far as the leaders, the front runners, they're simply pawns of the corporations. And they're going to do what the corporations tell them to do, or they're not going to get funding. And so it's an easy way to spend $1 billion on a campaign, waste it, that could be gone into the infrastructure and schools of the country and so forth. So I've got a sign outside my house on the fence that says if voting would change things, they'd make it illegal. And I think I said to my wife yesterday, I said, I wonder who God hates the worst, the Republicans or the black people of New Orleans. Now, we got this with the weather war, maybe and the hurricane was headed for the Republicans, but maybe they prayed enough that their God has now shifted the hurricane headed for New Orleans again. Maybe a second Katrina. So
okay.
That's my kind of dark humor. I don't know.
I understand. Many voters feel the country has gotten worse since President Barack Obama was sworn in. You view black people as inferior, and your website showcases them as big-lipped, immoral, stupid, and threatening beasts. Let me ask you a question, straight up and man to man, because if we're going to talk about race, let's not pussyfoot around.
Okay.
Is it your contention that the country is still struggling to recover on a number of levels because America put a black man in a White House?
No, I think it's trying to recover mostly from the white man you put in a White House before him. George Bush is a war criminal, should be arrested and tried. He's crazy. He spent billions of dollars occupying countries that we shouldn't be into, and the big bank ripoffs were under his watch. And instead of nationalizing the big banks and hauling those guys off to prison, he let them make a fortune off of it. So I sympathize a little bit with Obama that he inherited a real bad situation, and they don't give the Republicans, of course, don't give him any credit for that at all. And here's the Republicans who were on the forefront of shipping the jobs out of this country, starting as far back as Nixon, and they're standing on the sidelines crying about the middle class and how it's being destroyed. Bush and the Republican Party have done far more damage to this country than Obama's done so far.
How do you feel about Mitt Romney and the fact that a Mormon could be elected the next president of the United States?
Well, any Christian, I see Christianity as Christ insanity, all these mythology groups, it doesn't make any difference. One's just as crazy as the other. And Mitt Romney, he just doesn't impress me at all, man, I'll tell you.
Does that mean you're likely to support Obama the next in the election?
I don't vote. I'm through voting. My vote is not voting. I believe like in the European thing. I have no confidence. I have no confidence in any of them.
When's the last time you voted?
Ooh, I think it was three or four elections ago. I think I did, but I don't remember for sure.
You run for office. Do you have any intentions of running for office in the future?
No, that's over. I'll never do it again. It's ridiculous. I mean, here in Indiana where I moved, California was one thing, very interesting state politically, but Indiana's something else. The Republicans have this state so locked up, so anti-union, so anti-labor, and these dumb people around here fall for it. And it's unbelievable when I talk to the common white guy here in Indiana how dumb they are following a party that's screwing them to the walls, even worse than the Democrats could. And then the Democrats, their leadership is so stupid and so non-supportive of the working class that they can't get any traction. So I've offered to go to their meetings and tell them how, but they haven't invited me.
Okay, well, that's pretty much all the questions that I have. I'd like to take this opportunity to let you have the floor if there's anything that you'd like to say right
Oprah's
now
latest release,
to the American public. It's your opportunity to do so.
Well, everything that I've been talking about for years is coming true. Not that I've got a crystal ball, because you don't need a crystal ball. The economic super rich, the 2%, 3% in this country, have now gotten almost all the marbles in their bag, and the people, the middle class is disappearing and going to be destroyed. Meanwhile, the government has the borders open for millions of people coming in. And these people, you got to understand, in any country where you have massive mixing of cultures and religions and so forth, sooner or later you're going to have all this kind of stuff, problems they have in Asia and the Middle East. And we should have controlled our population back about the 1950s and kept it that way and closed the borders. And we'd be fine shape now. But all I can say is, like Churchill said, you're looking at blood, sweat, and tears from here on in, because we're broke. It's all our birthright has been spent, and there's only one way out is going to be more and more dictatorship and more people going up, blowing their tops and shooting people and doing all kinds of stuff. And it's not because of Tom Metzger. I'm not telling anybody to do that kind of stuff. In fact, I tell them it's non-productive. But keep your powder dry, because sooner or later, them the government people are going to be kicking in your doors. If you resist, if you acquiesce to being a slave, you'll be all right. You'll be hungry. You won't have a job, but they won't come after you. But if you resist the government, or resist the criminality and their gang mentality, they're going to come after you.
Thank you, Mr. Metzger.
Thank you.
This is from the G-Man, signing off.